VanCast for you here on this Thursday as we work our way to a weekend, a glorious looking weekend here in Vancouver, Tom, and hopefully people will be able to get out and enjoy, and maybe we can help them spend some of their time if they're going out for a walk on the seawall or around the park, whatever. Take us with you and listen to the VanCast, and we should mention as well, before we get up and running on this episode, huge thanks to Newell Brown. I thought that was a really good episode. We got lots of great feedback, so just wanted to take a moment to thank Newell for stopping by and being part of the VanCast midweek. If people haven't had a chance to listen to that one, maybe you file it away for the weekend and have a listen, because I just thought there was a lot of really good stuff in there with Newell Brown.
Yeah, a lot of meat on the bone. He's so detailed. It was a fascinating conversation. Really enjoyed having him on. And best of luck to him wherever he lands. I expect he will, in fact, land and be working and running an NHL power play next year. He should be.
Canuck coaches everywhere these days. Newell Brown, not a Canuck.
Newell Brown no longer a Canuck. And in a tanning bed near you.
Newell Brown no longer a Canuck coach, but hey, that looked like Travis Green on my television screen last night. That was incredible, the timing of that.
So good. You know, hopefully Travis has better luck at the tables than he did being shown on national broadcast right before his former winger Tyler Toffoli scores on the power play in a big Canadiens win in Vegas. What an incredible run that's continuing. I mean, that was a pretty decisive win. I know Vegas sort of got to doing Vegas things in the third period, but Montreal was full value. That was a really good performance.
All I could think when they showed Travis on TV is like, man goes to Vegas to get away from it all. And then he's dragged right back into his worst nightmare as Tyler Toffoli. Like, he hasn't seen enough Tyler Toffoli goals and been reminded of Tyler Toffoli all season. Goes to Vegas in the offseason, and there's Toffoli doing it again. So
incredible. I'm sure he's happy for him, but my goodness.
Sure. Hopefully he had a sense of humor about it all. Hey, there was a little bit of other Canuck news to come out of the game last night, or at least the broadcast, and that was Elliot Friedman reporting that Travis Hamonic, who to this point has always been locked in on Western Canada, right? In fact, the deal from the Islanders to get to Calgary and then signing with the Canucks, it was all about staying and playing in Western Canada closer to home. He's a Winnipeg guy, but still, Western Canada was his preferred destination, and it has been the last couple of years, but Elliot reporting that Hamonic is opening the doors here as a pending UFA, which, you know, that can complicate matters for the Vancouver Canucks. If they're serious about re-signing him, they still have exclusive rights for another month or so, but this now brings other options into the mix for Travis Hamonic.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, look, good on Hamonic. He should be keeping his options open. It's too dicey in UFA for mid-range players these days to limit your options artificially, right? I mean, if you are looking to get fair value, you need to have open options. So totally understandable decision. I don't think anything that, you know, I don't think it's anything that Canucks fans or management should be panicking about in the event that they view Hamonic as a must-have piece. I wouldn't if I was Canucks management, but I think the fit makes a ton of sense if, you know, all things being equal. And I expect the club to still, you know, try really hard to get it done, but not before the expansion draft, first of all.
Anyway. Right.
Yeah. And although you could have the parameters sort of agreed to, even if you don't put pen to paper until after, you know, I expect the club still to be motivated to keep Hamonic if it all makes sense, but it has to be at the right sort of price point, from a Canucks perspective, in my opinion. And you know, For me, it's a complicating factor, but it's nothing to sort of get your back up about or even worry about too much. The club needs to be really careful in what cap space they allocate to anybody they sign who's a non-star player. They're not going to have a ton of space to pay, you know, 30-year-old guys a ton of treasure in term this summer. Like, they structurally, that's just not where they're at unless they can significantly reallocate cap space out of pieces like Erickson, Beagle, Roussel, you know, and Holtby, right? Barring one of those deals, like, they're not looking at paying a guy $4.5 million to play defense for them next season. Like, they're just not. I don't see how they can be. And so, you know, I know that the sides had really good dialogue before the trade deadline. I think there's still, you know, obviously this bit of information sort of suggests that perhaps things could get complicated, but I still think the club's going to be motivated to find a deal here. And the fact that Hamonic's expanded his list of potential destinations, maybe that takes the Canucks a little bit out of the driver's seat, but probably only a little bit. Even if you're willing to hear offers and go elsewhere, surely the lure of this factor that's been determinative in your career for the past 5 years doesn't just go away, even if you're open to other options, right? So we'll sort of see where this one goes, but this one for me is one that you have to look at, in the context of negotiations and the flat cap era and how difficult it is to get appropriate valuations as a UFA, a non-star UFA in the market these days. I don't think it significantly changes sort of the arithmetic or the structure of what everyone's looking at here.
I don't either, but I just think for some people that are trying to pencil in lineups for next season and the Canucks moving forward, thinking that maybe that was a player that, the Canucks had the upper hand because they had leverage, since he didn't, to this point, want to move on, that, if you've got a guy that has articulated the fact that he wants to play here, then, maybe that puts the ball in the Canucks' court. But now, like, why wouldn't you? Even if it's posturing from his camp, like, why wouldn't you use all avenues available to you to up your leverage? And the other thing, too, is, they got him on the bargain basement deal ahead of training camp because last year was, it was fucked, let's be honest. The whole year was, right? Like, he's a 30-year-old who can still play in the National Hockey League. Like, they weren't going to get him on that same contract.
No.
A second time around. So even if people wanted to believe that there was value there, the idea of getting Hamonic, 1 year at $1 million, like, that wasn't going to happen. So anyways, we'll see where that one goes. It's interesting to note, Tom, like, today, as we record this on June 17th, is exactly 1 month for all NHL teams to submit their protected list to the National Hockey League. So let the maneuvering begin. I know games are still going on. The playoffs still have, another round beyond this one, but the clock is now ticking because we have spent the last couple of years talking about teams that are going to be in a protection crunch and other teams maybe trying to poach and move in. 1 month from today, teams have to lock in their protected lists, submit them to the National Hockey League, and I thought a really instructive piece. Look, there have been a ton of mock drafts done, but our colleagues at The Athletic, Ryan Clark, the beat writer for Seattle Kraken, Eric DeHatchik, and Dom Lecision, have gone through, I think it's mock draft 7.0,
yeah,
in The Athletic.
We love our mock expansion drafts, bud.
But a month out, this now, and like, these are informed opinions. These are guys that have done their homework and their research. Like, this gives you a pretty good idea of what the Kraken's initial draft list could look like. Not necessarily their opening night roster, because there will be changes beyond that. But in terms of players that are plucked from the other NHL teams, I think it's really instructive for people to go through it and have a look. And you get a sense of, like, okay, those are the types of players that are going to be available to the Seattle Kraken. We boil it down to a Canucks perspective. Ryan has them taking Madison Bowie, and the other two have Zach MacEwen. So there you go. That's mock draft 7.0, has the Canucks losing Zach MacEwen twice and Madison Bowie once.
Yeah, and, there's some names on that list that I think should be premium Canucks targets in the trade market, right? And you sort of look at, Mason Appleton's name keeps coming up.
I know they had him on. So, yeah, we talked about him. But
as he should, like, this market right now is like Gaga over Sam Reinhardt, right? And fair enough. Long list of Vancouver connections there, obviously his father. If you're on a beach and you see Sam Reinhardt this summer, like, that could very well happen if you're a hardcore enough NHL fan to recognize him, right? Like, he does make his offseason home here. Vancouver kid, Vancouver hockey family, on and on, right? Really good player too. Let's add that, right? Like, a really good defensive top six forward who scores goals in bunches. Top 10 NHL scorer this year. Really good piece. And Canucks fans are excited about the prospect that, he might be moved, right? And maybe the Canucks can get in on that. Fair enough. But a player like Mason Appleton, for me, at 900K next year, like, it might not be sexy. It might not get, people sort of not, like, salivating over the prospect of it. But, man, he's good. Like, he's really good. He's 25. He's 900K next year. He's had very few opportunities to play with really, really skilled players or in offensive situations in his career to this point, at the NHL level anyway. Like, that's the type of piece. Warren Fogle. A lot of my colleagues had Warren Fogle being picked. That's it. That's another guy. You know, and in both cases, yeah, if Carolina trades Warren Fogle, they're maybe a little bit more worried about losing Jake Bean. And yeah, if Winnipeg trades Mason Appleton, they're maybe a little bit worried about losing Logan Stanley. So you don't get the guy for a fourth round pick, but you might be able to get him for a second or a second in a prospect or something like that. And those are the types of pieces that for me are worth trading, you know, if not retail value, pretty close to it for, because they're affordable, because they're fast, because they're good defensively, because they can play in your middle six and add real heft. And, you know, like, the Canucks really do have to get at least a piece out of one of these expansion crunch teams. Like, I think it's an absolute necessity, an essential thing that this club has to find a way to do over the next month, because, you know, you do have to get that done before the trade freeze. And as you say, that trade freeze is exactly a month away now.
Just looking at Dom Lecision's comments, like, they go through it team by team and they all explain why they picked the player they did. So Ryan Clark has a little blurb on Madison Bowie, and then Duhacik and Dom both write about McEwen. And Dom says, really didn't matter who I picked here, as it was unlikely anyone available from Vancouver would actually make the team. McEwen seems fine, I guess. He didn't produce at all, but his possession numbers were among the team's best. It is crazy, Tom. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, we are weeks away from, not that we're going to mark it, but the one-year anniversary of the Canucks summer training camp, right? The bubble training camp ahead of going back into the bubble. At this time last year, the Canucks' right side consisted of Tyler Toffoli, a healthy Brock Besser, an 18-goal Jake Virtanen, and Zach McEwen, who was one of the standouts of that summer camp.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Life moves pretty quickly.
I remember, like, doing the mock drafts then, right? And it was like people were debating hotly in the comments, like, I don't know about losing Zach McEwen, or, like, you know, and Jake Virtanen and Adam Gaudette and Tyler Toffoli and Jacob Markstrom were on like the first iteration of my projected expansion list included like eight players that are no longer on the team. Just wild. It was really a incredible 12 months for this club. I mean, not just what happened in the bubble, but also all the players that have either disappointed, filtered through, been dealt, left in free agency. Incredible. Like, this last 12 months, and I still think people are grappling with it. You know, like, even Newell Brown saying that he thought the club's performance in the bubble was more representative of this team's level, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just not the same team. Fundamentally, it's just not. And, you know, I do think repairing that is going to take some work here this offseason.
Well, and I keep seeing it in my timeline, like, enough, we get it. You know, Toffoli's moved on, and that's fine. But you can't just sweep it under the rug, because so many conversations lead back to those decisions. Like, you mentioned Sam Reinhart. That's great. For all the things you said about Sam Reinhart, I agree. But they sort of had their Sam Reinhart here in a right-shot goal-scoring guy.
Totally. That
you've gone out and paid a hefty price to acquire. Like, all of a sudden now, if you're going to make this play to get...
And who's going
to
be more affordable on his current deal than Reinhart will be on his next, right?
Like, right. So you can't. Like, I understand sort of the frustration of some of the fan base, and they do want it just to go away, and yet there's Tyler Toffoli popping up in the third round of the playoffs with the Canucks head coach in attendance doing what he has done all season long. So, sorry, barking up the wrong tree. You know, like, that storyline can't just be put to bed, even if you have some fan fatigue about it.
No. Well, and it speaks to, you know, it speaks to everything. Like, it speaks to evaluations. It speaks to, like, why was this club unable to use a buyout? Why was the defense prioritized to such an extent that they were willing to walk away from Toffoli, right? Were they wrong about this club's inability organizationally, about this club's ability to score, right? To the point that, you know, they could afford to weaken their top six like that. Pretty clear the top six forward remains a gap for this team, especially with, you know, the way that Gaudette and Virtanen and McEwen none of them progress next year, right? Or last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to a whole host of things, that challenges that the club faces again this year, right? Managing a really tight cap space situation, finding ways to carve out additional cap space. And that's really the key. Like, as I've been thinking about this more and more, right? And as additional people keep asking me, like, would you trade the ninth overall for Sam Reinhart? You know, the thing I keep coming back to is, if you're trading a top 10 pick, right, you have to be pretty damn sure you're a really good team, right? Like, you don't trade a top 10 pick and the next season miss the playoffs, or have any doubt about missing the playoffs. Like, you cannot trade a top 10 pick and the next season be a bubble playoff team. Like, that's not how this works. That is insane. You know, if you're trading that pick, you have to be really sure that you're good, that you're really good. And so what I keep coming back to in thinking about this, and thinking about the shape of, like, is there a scenario in which the Canucks should realistically consider moving ninth overall? For me, it's like, you have to be not just getting a good player, but reallocating cap space from an inefficient one, right? So it's like, do you trade ninth overall for Sam Reinhart? Like, I don't know, because if you do, then you are still looking at filling out your blue line with like $3 million in space instead of $8 million in space. Like, I find it difficult to see how the club fits a $5.5-6 million piece on into the lineup if they're not finding ways to get out of, you know, the Holtby money beyond a buyout, because a buyout's only $3 million. You know, like, that, if Sam Reinhart takes up 6 of your 11, you're still kind of fucked, right? Roussel, Beagle, Erickson, like, it really needs to involve reappropriating that cap space in addition to upgrading. Like, would I do ninth overall with Louis Erickson, $6 million, for Sam Reinhart? So now all of a sudden I'm turning Louis Erickson's $6 million into a top six piece, a credible top six piece. Like, yeah, then I'm starting to think about it. Then it's becoming something that I think the club benefits from. Who's going to do that, right? Like, is Buffalo going to do that? I don't know. I mean, market value for moving off of Louis might be that ninth overall in isolation, right?
Right.
Based on what we've seen with the Marlowe comp and on and on. So it becomes really complicated for me. And I just think the fundamental challenge of this offseason is, however it's done, right? Whether through buyouts, whether through trades, it's about finding, if you can find any way to get any value out of Beagle's 3 and Erickson's 6 and Roussel's 3 and Holtby's 4.3, then you begin to be talking about an offseason in which you can be aggressive, right? Like, if you could reappropriate that Erickson space into a player like a Reinhart, like a top six piece at the cost of your first overall, if you could find a team, like, I was looking through teams that I expected to be motivated to save cash, for example, right? Because Beagle has this bonus. After it's paid out, he's only owed $1 million in salary, right? Would a team like the Arizona Coyotes, right, do a deal where you got Tyler Pitlick, right, who's like a pretty fast, tough, good bottom six forward, type of guy you could see Travis Green playing a ton of, like, right, just playing him a ton. Could you get him for Jay Beagle if you retained $1.3 million of Beagle's cap hit? So it's a cap neutral deal, but you upgrade from Beagle to Pitlick. The Coyotes would save, they take on an additional $1.3 million in cap, but they'd save, you know, almost $2.5 million in the transaction. That might be attractive, right, to the Coyotes. They might enjoy saving that money. Is that the type of deal you can make? And if you did save both of those, right, now all of a sudden, instead of looking at having, you know, negative value contributors at $9 million in cap space, you're looking at having like a really good bottom six forward and a really good top six forward for that money. Now the logic of a Holtby buyout begins to make sense, right? Now, at least you're positioned to be competitive enough next season that you can begin to do some of the things that fans get excited about in terms of, you know, making win now moves. But in the absence of like all of that falling into place, JPAT, I just think you're better off targeting the Fogles and the Appletons of the world and waiting till next season to really go big game hunting in terms of reconstructing your supporting cast and your blue line. And that's increasingly how I'm beginning to think about sort of the Canucks challenge this offseason. And the meat of that work really does have to happen before the roster freeze over the next month.
I don't think the Sabres have the appetite to take on Louis Erickson for a final year. So try this one on for size. Poke a hole in this theory. What if you could attach Antoine Roussel to that ninth overall pick? A guy that could play, like he could play for the Sabres. He could play this final year of his contract. In fact, if he played well, you know, maybe they could flip him and get something for him at the deadline as a pending UFA, a rental.
Double retention guy, sure.
Yeah. Like, is there more validity in something like that? Again, I just don't see the Sabres thinking, I think Louis Erickson devalues that ninth overall pick at his price point, but Roussel might be a little more palatable because A, he's half the price, but B, you know, I think he can still play out the final year of his contract.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the type of thing you need to attach. If you're going big game hunting with the ninth overall, you need to attach inefficient money to it, right? Maybe it's Holtby, right? Like maybe they'd like a locker room leader and a goaltender, right? To partner with Luke, Allmark, but you know, I'm not suggesting specifics so much as I'm suggesting concepts, things the club could look at. You know, the other guy that the Sabres have that I think makes sense as a money dump type player would be Colin Miller, right? Colin Miller makes 3.8. It's all salary. Is there an opportunity to, you know, find your way or get your way in there and sort of lower the acquisition cost because you're saving the Sabres a ton of money in a season in which, especially with what they're considering doing with Jack Eichel and maybe having two top five picks. I mean, the reason for the Sabres to do it would be we have three picks in the top 10. We're doing it the right way this time, right? And we're saving money. So, you know, that's an opportunity too. Those are the types of pieces and players that I'm really focused on right now in terms of my trawling around for concepts, because that's sort of where I think, you know, it's effectively like the Florida model. It's effectively doing Mike Matheson for Patrick Hornquist, right? Like it's bad money in, bad money out, but at least you're finding someone who you can get more value out of. It's the Edmonton Oilers trading, you know, Milan Lucic for James Neal, right? Like that's sort of where the Canucks are looking at. And if you're trying to be aggressive, if you're trying to make the playoffs next year, like fundamentally the first step is finding some way to turn the 19 plus million you've got committed to Erickson, Beagle, Roussel, and Holtby into something of real tangible value for this club. And it's a really tall order.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
There are so many good stories going on around the Stanley Cup playoffs and so many incredible players performing at such a high level. The guy that I am locked on to right now, and I think this can tie into the Vancouver Canucks because we've spent lots of time here on the Vancast Top talking about, you know, that third line center position and how are they going to address it. I don't think he is necessarily the fit, but I can't get enough of Philip Deneau right now for the Montreal Canadiens. And like he was incredible last night, 21 and a half minutes, played 9 minutes of the third period, tried to lock down that lead. He's a UFA to B. How does the league value a guy like that who plays a ton and is so good defensively but produces nothing? He is the Habs' leading ice time guy among forwards and has 2 points 12 games into the playoffs. Plays a ton. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of thought in the way of offense. Like, how's the league going to value him? Because I think as a UFA, there isn't a team that's going to go out there and say, like, we have to have this guy to play on our top line necessarily, even though he's kept Stone and Pacioretty in check so far through the first couple of games. Like, he's done his job, but he's just such a unique player in that offense seems to be, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, it doesn't even seem to register with him, and yet the Habs love him, and he's really good at what he does.
I think he would be highly valued around the league. I think he's seen as a beast, and he should be seen as a beast. He's an incredible two-way player. I, you know, he wasn't on my Selke ballot this year, but he was the year prior, and deservedly so. You know, the lack of offense, I mean, he had, what, 24 points in 53 regular season games? So that's decent production. I mean, that's, you know, 35-ish points without a ton of power play time. Like, that's what I'd call a low-end second-line rate. So he produces at a low-end second-line rate in the regular season. That's sort of consistent with, you know, not consistent with his past seasons where he was a 50-point player, right? But I think he'd be valued as a genuine top six forward with plus-plus defensive value. And so I think he's going to be an expensive piece in free agency. Like, at, you know, definitely a $4-5 million piece per year. So, you know, I do think a player like Deneau, perfect fit though he'd be, is going to be out of the price range of a lot of teams. And there's a lot of teams that would love to add a player like that, especially if they can envision him playing third line center. You know, that, I mean, he's exceptional. So yeah, I mean, I think he's out of the Canucks' price range, right? Like, it, for sure.
Oh, so do I. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, then you get down to how do you fill out, you know, you're like, first of all, I think it's going to be Miller anyway, but how do you find value? Like, I don't see a Carter Verhaeghe on the open market this year. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't. I think you're looking at a different class of gamble if you're the Canucks, which again, just sort of shines the spotlight on the leverage of doing, you know, an expansion, a smart expansion type deal, like of getting an Appleton or of getting a Fogle, of getting a player like that, as opposed to, you know, big game hunting. Cause I just don't see the space for big game hunting without clearing additional cap commitment.
With Deneau, though, like, don't you, again, there's so much value in a guy that can shut down the other team's best players.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, he's not a sexy player. Like, if you're going to make a big splash in free agency and you're trying to sell that to your family, like, he doesn't have a goal here in the playoffs. Again, if the guys that...
2 points in 13, right?
Right. But if the guys that he is tasked with shutting down don't score, then he is doing his job. But it's just, like, there can't be a long list in the history of the NHL of teams this deep into the playoffs whose leading ice time guy among forwards brings no offense.
No. It's a pretty incredible accomplishment and like a pretty unique
The Habs are this deep. They're tied 1-1 in the third round. They're 3 wins away from a trip to the Stanley Cup final with home ice advantage now.
Yeah, and their top forward has two points. But
Brendan Gallagher has 2 goals. Josh Anderson scored their first goal of the playoffs in game 1 against the Leafs and hasn't scored since, although he made a good play on the Byron goal last night, the sort of stick check. It doesn't show up in the box score, but Brendan Gallagher has 2 goals, Josh Anderson has 1, and Phil Deneau has no goals. And here are the Habs, 3 wins away from a trip to the Stanley Cup final. Like, you know, look, there's no blueprint. If there was, teams would follow it and they'd have success. Like, you know, you got to play to your strengths. And for the Montreal Canadiens, that is obviously more on the defensive side. And, you know, we talked about it at the outset of the series. If they get a lead, look out. Like, Vegas is going to have some trouble. And we saw that last night. But in the first game of the series, Vegas was able to get the lead. Montreal playing catch up. You know, they don't have that firepower to dig themselves out of holes. But, man, they're doing a nice job so far of, I mean, it's Alex Pietrangelo or nobody, essentially, for Vegas scoring the goals. So that tells you that the Habs have done a pretty good job on the Vegas forwards through 2 games.
There is a lesson, though. There is a lesson from the Montreal Canadiens being here that is worth noting for Canucks fans, right? Because the fundamental difference in what the Habs and the Canucks did in their experience over the past 12 months, right? Because both had a little bit of a surprise run in their respective bubbles, right? But where they really differ is one team spent like crazy, right? Like, one team exercised almost unique financial might in a challenging offseason, right? And one team joined the pack and was one of the bottom 10 spenders in the NHL as a result of the pressures, the financial pressures of the pandemic. And right then and there, you've got the difference, right? Like, the Habs went out and, you know, spent like crazy, man. They did. They had a ton of draft picks, which helped them do it. But, I mean, Jake Allen at a big number, Josh Anderson at a huge number. Joel Edmondson, right?
Yeah, they re-upped Gallagher,
Re-upped Gallagher, Tyler Toffoli, right? I mean, the Tyler Toffoli example is perfect, right? Like, that tells you everything. And that's, I think, the fundamental difference. One team went about spending this offseason and is way further than anyone could have realistically imagined. And the other, you know, did not and, you know, took a further step back than anyone could have imagined. Now, it does seem with the Clark deal, the Travis Green deal, you know, both at competitive market value and in Clark's case, you know, well beyond competitive market value, right? That the taps are back on a little bit. And that's a big thing for the Canucks, because one way around a lack of cap space is to spend quietly, right? Like, if you take some swings on a bunch of $1 million guys or relatively affordable guys, and they don't work out, but their cap hits are low, you know, no big deal. Like, no big deal, right? And so there's like a volume approach that you can take in throwing, you know, shit against a wall, as it were, right? and hoping something sticks. And, you know, this was not the Habs model, but the Habs had cap space. But the, like, if you go look at the Panthers rebuilt blue line, and I keep coming back to the Panthers just because I think it's such an instructive example for the Canucks. Like, it's a team that, you know, was out of it, good core, not enough of a supporting cast. How did they fix it? And they effectively rebuilt their blue line on the sly with a couple of affordable gambles, $2.5 million per year for Radko Gudas, trading for Marcus Nudavara at 2.7. That one didn't quite work out for them. Certainly didn't work out for them as well as the Gudas deal. And then Noah Juulsen, Kevin Connaughton, and Gustav Forsling off of waivers. And one of those three guys turns out to be a revelation in their top four, right? But it's when you look at the cumulative effect of taking all of those swings in terms of budget, right? You end up with like a $6 million, you know, that's the same fundamentally as adding a Nate Schmidt to your roster, right? It's just that you're taking additional swings. And if one pops and you get huge surplus value out of it, then you get huge surplus value out of it, right? Like, but the financial spend is the same. And that's something I think the Canucks can do this offseason, right? Is like, you know, cast a wider net. Maybe you're not going to be able to chase Seth Jones on the trade market, but if you bring in, you know, say a Brad Hunt plus, you know, a guy like Chris Weidman, who was the KHL's top scoring defenseman, sort of fell out of favor in the NHL, you know, plus, you know, a Yanni Hackenpay or John Merrill, who's played really well for the Habs. Can you get one guy, maybe Jake McCabe is a guy I like, or Jordan Osterle from the Coyotes? Like, if you take a bunch of lower leverage swings, can you mine one or maybe two everyday players with lesser cap impact, right? That's something, again, like, not the sexy approach, but something that could pay real dividends for this team as they hope to improve. Like, that's just sort of the arena this Canucks team is playing at. And it's as a result of, you know, unwise commitments from yesteryear, sort of rearing their head and complicating matters further in this flat cap era. And that's sort of, you know, one way the club can sort of navigate things.
Todd, did you see the NHL Players Association, the players survey that was released? Not a Canuck to be found anywhere.
No. I think Petey might have gotten robbed for most fashionable.
Yeah.
I think he probably deserved more consideration there. But I mean, tough to argue with much other than right?
I thought it was interesting by a 2-1 margin. Players want to stick with that sort of baseball style schedule of staying and playing in the same city. But at the same time, they want to get back to playing other teams in other divisions. So, you know, you're not going to get a series of 3 or 4 games in the same city if you go back to interdivisional play. But clearly they were down with the idea of playing the same opponent a couple of times in a row.
Yeah. I mean, I like that. I like that idea. How many times you play like central teams, right? So the Canucks would play central teams other Western Division teams, I mean, more often than you'd play Eastern teams, right? Eastern teams, you do a 1-1, right?
Yeah.
And then, but you'd still have, there'd still be a good case to be doing, you know, a 4-day stint in Nashville, right?
If you're going to go to Nashville, twice in the season, the argument would be to play both your games in in one stop.
Yeah, and that sounds awesome for us, JPAT. Great, that sounds fantastic. I'm all for it. I'm all for that. That sounds fantastic. I think it makes a ton of sense from an environmental perspective. I think it makes a ton of sense from a wear and tear perspective. I definitely think there's different ways of doing this, and you know. Let's go. Let's go. The players want it. Jonathan Toews is on board. Seems like the right call.
Don't know if I could handle 4 straight lunches at Pecan Lodge. That might be. you'd have to carry me out on day 3, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we could always
give it a shot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to aim high, JPAT.
I suppose
we have to aspire to something.
The other news of the day is that the GMs of the year are out. The candidates, Mark Bergevin, Lou Lamoriello, and Bill Zito. Are these voted on by... I get confused because GMs vote on the Vezina. Who votes on the GMs? Is that a media?
I think it's other vote? GMs. Yeah, I think it's this...
That's other GMs?
I think it's self-selected. Okay. It's like Ted Lindsay.
And I guess I'm okay with that. Like, GMs voting for the Vezina doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But it is what it is. But, you know, a peer vote would make some sense when you're looking at executive of the year. So
I don't see how Joe Sakic's a nominee this year. Personally, I also think Julien Brisebois should be a nominee this year. But you know, when you hold the voting sort of after the playoffs, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but I mean, you add Toews and Brandon Saad for a song and do what the Avs did all year. Like, yeah, you lose game 7, but I mean, that team was a monster. One of the best teams I've seen in the cap era. I know playoff success matters a ton to everybody in this business, as it should. But you know, in terms of grading the work, I just it doesn't make sense to me that Joe Sakic wouldn't have been a nominee.
Well, we'll see who comes out on top in that one again. Bill Zito, Florida. You got Lou Lamoriello, the Islanders, and Mark Bergevin, so 2 of the 3 GMs.
Well, and actually, how about McCrimmon? Why is McCrimmon not a nominee? He upgraded Pietrangelo, Delt Schmidt. I mean, you know, that was good work. Like, that team is
yep.
Very, very good and very, very pressed up against the cap and still finds ways to make, you know, marginal improvements as they go. Like, that's really hard to do. You know, Bill Zito, with the frequency that I cite the Florida model as something that Canucks should ape here, right? I mean, I think he nailed his first offseason. For me, that's a no-doubter. And, you know, Bergevin, obviously, with what the Habs have accomplished in the playoffs, deserves a hat tip, although I wonder if you could give it to Jeff Molson. But, you know, the exclusion of Sakic is one that I find deeply confusing.
Well, we'll see when the results are revealed as they go through here through the Stanley Cup final. I think we get there's no award show this year as there was last year. They'll just do it sort of on a nightly basis. And we saw the other night, Oscar Lindblom of the Flyers gets the Masterton. And I've said this before, like I hate picking a winner there. Like, I mean, he's an incredible story, but so is Patrick Marleau when he sets the all-time games played record. Like, you're talking about dedication and perseverance for a guy that's now played more games than anybody in the National Hockey League, and yet you're putting up against a guy that has overcome cancer. I just wish they would just, like, leave it at the league level. Every team submits a finalist, and we celebrate all of those guys because I just think it's so hard to pick one over the other. But hat tip to the winners and to all of the finalists for all these league awards. I want to mention that we've got a couple of other pod options for you here at The Athletic that you might want to check out. Former Canuck Matt Cook joined Mike Russo on Straight from the Source. Find out what the Cooker is up to in his after-playing days. That's available at The Athletic. Also, Nashville Predators goalie Pekka Rinne joined Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on the Two-Man Advantage edition of The Athletic Hockey Show. So you can look for those. We always love your feedback, and we make it easy for you. You can check out our comment section, leave us a remark. That's at the Athletic app as well. Each episode has its own comment section, so drop us a line there. Also, rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. If you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for just $3.99 a month. Again, we direct you to Mock Draft version 7.0, 1 month from teams having to submit their protected list to the National Hockey League, an instructive piece that is well worth your time. All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the VanCast, unless you've got anything else you want to jump in on.
I mean, I always can go, but let's leave it there. Yeah, I've got to save. Yeah, I've got to save some stuff.
Next week we'll present more options for you, more opportunities. But we'll call it a day. Thanks to everybody for taking some time out of their day to listen to another episode of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.